Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Michael Collins of Journey to Success, and I'm interviewing tonight Michelle Brown of Into Action Coaching. And just to tell you a little bit about myself, I've written the book Ushering in the Golden Age, Elevate Your Consciousness. It's all about creating a love-based, heart-centered psychology. To find out more about me and my book and what I'm doing, you can either go to www.michaelrobincollins.com or usheringinthegoldenage.com, and you'll find information on the book, things that I'm doing, workshops I'm putting together. So this evening, I'm here with Michelle Brown. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Michael.
How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show tonight.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself, Michelle, a little bit about your background, and, you know, the subject for tonight's talk is transformational leadership. So why don't you talk about transformational leadership a little bit to give the listeners an introduction?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, my story is I'm an executive coach, and this is absolutely my passion. You know, as an executive coach, something that I've been doing full-time now, my practice Into Action Coaching, as you mentioned, was started in January of 2007. It's actually my second career. I spent 25 years in corporate as a marketing and licensing executive, and stepped onto this path to becoming a coach quite divinely and certainly not accidentally when I was able to uncover that what I truly enjoyed about my role as a manager for all of those years was the opportunity to support people in terms of having them step into their potential and being their highest and best self. So, you know, it's a passion of mine, and I absolutely have to pinch myself every day that I get to do what I absolutely love, which is to partner with executives and managers, you know, as they are looking to express their leadership potential within the roles that they may have at the company that they work for.
That sounds great. So, yeah. So Michelle, what is transformational leadership?
Yeah, you know, transformational leadership is one of these sort of concepts that sort of originated with the leadership expert and presidential biographer James McGregor Burns. And it's basically the type of leadership style that leads to positive changes in those who follow. So it's, you know, I like what you made reference to in terms of your book, you know, heart-centered, value-based leadership. That's really what transformational leadership is all about. It's the ability that a leader has to transform groups, you know, and organizations, and they're really primarily focused on followers, motivating them to higher levels of performance, and in that process, helping those followers develop their own leadership potential as they move in the direction of fulfilling whatever the company or business objectives and goals are.
Okay, so let's say we had a group of five people. What would the interaction look like?
Well, you know, it boils down to a leader's ability to adapt their behavioral style. It's really, you know, you've heard the term emotional intelligence.
Yes.
It's, you know, if we were in a group of five people, there would be a leader. And again, that leader doesn't necessarily have to have what we call position power or authority. They're just a type of individual who can read the group and recognize how to influence the others to their point of view or their way of thinking and adapt, you know, their communication and behavioral style to align with the others in the group to influence them. So it's not about positioning and leveraging their formal authority, sort of the dictatorship style of leadership. It's about really looking to, you know, who the individuals are and finding out what's a passion or a value for them so that, you know, they can ultimately, the individuals can tap into what's important to them. And when they're able to do that, they're able to fulfill on, you know, tasks and projects because the individual person is motivated to do it. And it's not because they're told to do it. It's because they have a vested interest.
So would it be safe to say that a transformational leader basically taps into the psyche of the group and then brings out people's best potential and gets them to cooperate using each individual's potential or each individual's talent to support the whole of the group?
Absolutely. You know, there's a quote that says, people don't care what you know until they know that you care.
Right.
So it's really the ability that a leader has to demonstrate genuine concern for the needs and the feelings of those around them. And that's no small feat. You know, a lot of the training that I do and the individualized coaching that I do is aimed at having individuals recognize the importance of showing empathy and care because, you know, you won't get very far with formal authority, but it's distilling it down to, you know, showing a lot of compassion and interest towards the needs of those who you might be leading and tapping into that in order to, you know, move a project or a department or an organization forward. One other observation that I have around this is within organizations today, I'm finding that there's absolutely a, I call it a leadership revolution that is underway in the sense that businesses and companies are recognizing slowly but surely that their greatest assets are their people. You know, so it's recognizing that, yes, if you're a publicly held, you know, company and you're answering to shareholders and it's about profits and earnings, those things can be achieved, but ultimately it's recognizing how do we, you know, grow our business, how do we generate the revenue, how do we sell our products, and how do we service our constituents. It's really making sure that the employees within your organization or your department are motivated and inspired, and that's ultimately the job of a transformational leader.
And Michelle, tell me, because you use a couple of words that, you know, we don't normally equate in corporate America, like empathy and compassion.
Yes.
Because so many times we see the doggy dog, we see the manager just pounding on the employees, just looking for results, looking for numbers. So how does this empathy and compassion, I guess it's a two-part question, how does this look in the corporate world? And as far as your coaching, how do you go in and help people make that transition from that old-style management to becoming more aware of their heart, more empathetic towards their employees and working with them, and yet at the same time knowing that they have, you know, bottom-line results that they have to meet?
Good. Good questions. So let me handle the former one first. So you said, what does it look like?
Yes.
So what it looks like, and trust me, you know, I do believe that we're somewhat at the embryonic stages of this leadership revolution. You know, the recession that hit us hard, you know, in the beginnings of 2008 brought about the need for doing things differently. You know, we're in the age of business unusual. So there certainly are, I would say, by and large, a greater number of companies, you know, nonprofit, for-profit, and public, that are still, you know, being led by leaders who, you know, by any means necessary, right, so focused on the results that they've not recognized that in order to drive their businesses forward, it's about turning back around and, you know, and not overlooking the needs of the individuals that they may ultimately be accountable for. So I think it's a very sort of slow and gradual. It's like making a U-turn in a 747. But I truly believe that as a result of the recession. And, you know, the way that we're looking at organizations now, you know, the aspect around loyalty may not be there any longer, because what businesses have had to do in order to maintain profits and earnings have cost, you know, a lot of outsourced jobs. So individuals now, you know, are looking for their own best interests. But because of that, for those companies who are looking to stabilize the workforce and, you know, rebuild in order to march forward to accomplish, you know, whatever their goals are, they're slowly recognizing that in order to attract and retain key people and, you know, high potential employees, because even though it's an employer's market out there, companies are still very interested in assuring that they are an employer of choice and that, you know, they are doing what they can to retain quality associates and employees. So as a result of that, you know, I am certainly finding it. This is sort of now going into the second part of your question. From a standpoint of, as a coach, I'm, you know, my organization is partnering with a number of companies that are looking to say, you know, how can we do things differently and what do we need to do to provide leadership support to, you know, some of our key executives so that they truly understand that as much as they are accountable for driving business results, how they do it is as equally important as the end result of the what. So coming in and, you know, it happens in two ways. I do a lot of trainings to groups. So whether they are individual contributors, when they may not be directly responsible, it's demonstrating that, you know, you may not have subordinates reporting into you, but as an individual contributor, what's my role to ensure that I'm effectively leading a project, so cross-functional teams, in a way that is going to, you know, communicate and be genuine and authentic and inspiring and motivating, and how do I learn, you know, certain communication or behavioral styles? So those trainings happen at the mid-manager level all the way up to, you know, senior management, as well as working individually with a number of employees or associates, where I call it doing a bit of customized polishing, which is truly helping an individual know what their own sort of unique predominant behavioral style is and learning through a lot of the assessments that I do. I'm a behavioral and values specialist, and all that means is that I'm certified in a number of assessments which help individuals uncover what their behavioral style is, and through that self-awareness, they're able to people read, so they're able to effectively adapt their style to align with others, because the old adage of one style fits all, you know, leadership is passé.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you find people are embracing this?
They really are. You know, I believe people out there are hungry for finding new ways to run businesses. It's a bit of a nuance, because I believe, you know, in this sort of Western Hemisphere, we haven't sort of embraced the EQ model. It has not become as institutionalized as it may have been, you know, in the East. But ultimately, I believe that, you know, with what we've gone through with this recession and the impact, and because we live and within a global environment, it's about an organization's ability to differentiate itself and to stay competitive. So, again, we're operating under the premise of business unusual these days, and subsequently it's, you know, it's not just focusing in on the product or the service and ensuring that it's best in class. It's, you know, who are the people that we have working in our organization, and are they humming and singing from the same hymnal, so to speak, and really, you know, working at their highest potential. So
right.
I believe, yeah, that's certainly what I'm uncovering, is that there's much more attraction around this type of transformational leadership.
Right. And if they're organized and singing from the same hymnal, then eventually the church, the windows of the churches are going to open up, and that message is going to spread to the public.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, to break down what I'm hearing you say, you're really talking about bringing more spirituality into the workplace and really treating people with higher values. And if we use the word love, being one of the highest vibrational words that we have, and then using different synonyms of love to get people to cooperate. This sounds like what you want to bring into the workplace.
Yes, and you know I'm glad that you referenced the term spirituality, because it's a term that I believe a lot of people get confused with religion, right? And they're very, very different. You know, I love Oprah's one of my idols, my role models, and she's eloquently distinguished the difference around spirituality to just mean having an open heart, you know, and being compassionate and empathetic and recognizing, you know, that we're people. So you're right, bringing spirituality into the workplace and using words such as love or inspiration is just smart business. It's not soft by no stretch. It really takes a very strong leader to, you know, demonstrate that level of compassion and bringing about that level of authenticity and transparency, you know, to their leadership. So, yes, I truly believe that a lot of the work that I do, you know, is spiritual in helping people uncover their highest and their best self.
Now, do you find that you get a lot of resistance? Do you find that there are a lot of people who are maybe ridiculing what you're doing, calling it, oh, she's coming in with this namsy-pamsy stuff, because they are afraid to open themselves up to it?
Actually, Michael, no, I've not experienced that. I had some reservations, you know, as I, you know, went through my executive coaching training, and I knew in my heart that it was a passion and a desire to bring that element of spirituality in and through the work that I did. I had, you know, sort of mixed thoughts and a paradigm about whether it would be accepted, but absolutely not. I've been pleasantly surprised, because it's a very subtle thing, and actually what I'm finding is that people are starving for it. I had the good fortune recently to go back to a company that I worked for many years before I went off and started my private practice, and they have a women's leadership program, what they call an affinity group. And they asked me to talk about, you know, my path and how I started my practice post my days at that company. And I spoke about transformational leadership, and I talked about personal power, especially, you know, considering the dynamics of what women, you know, have faced, you know, in their eagerness to be held with the same level of esteem and respect as our male counterparts. But suffice to say that there was no resistance at all to the topic and the, you know, conversation and some of the key, you know, words that I used about, you know, being authentic and genuine and transparent and inspirational. I found that it almost allows people to be that, because we all have that within us. You know, we are spiritual beings moving through this human existence. And, you know, it's just not something that's spoken enough about, but I find whether it's, you know, opportunities that I get to speak to large groups or to do my trainings, I'm finding that people are very receptive to it. And the naysayers, you know, well, they're just marginalized, I feel. I've not run across them per se, but, you know, I felt that there are more followers and supporters of this, you know, new type of leadership than there are those who oppose it.
Right. And would you say one of the reasons why there are so many followers and people are starting to embrace it is because they feel so much pain in the old system and the way that the old system has not worked and it's really, in many aspects of it, really torn down people?
Yes. Absolutely. that old way, however, you know, historic it's been and institutionalized it's been, it's just not working. And you're right, people are just feeling downtrodden. And, you know, when companies do these employment surveys, these engagement surveys, Gallup, you know, is one organization that comes to mind that's used by and large, you know, it's interesting to know that in some instances, I mean, I don't have data to support it, but sometimes the associate engagement level is relatively low. Again, depending upon what a company may be going through, you know, a massive layoff or restructuring. But you're right, it's you know, when an organization is courageous enough to tap in and ask for this level of feedback, by and large, you know, they will get feedback that helps them uncover that there's an expression I call people have quit, they just have forgotten to tell their employer.
Right.
So they come in every day, right, and, you know, the performance levels are not there, the productivity is not there, the engagement is not there. They're just, you know, punching a time clock because maybe, you know, they feel that it's the golden handcuffs and where else do they go. But, you know, it's about recognizing how do we get the best and the most from our people. And obviously it's a wake-up call about having to do things differently to get those performance and productivity levels up. And it is on a, you know, case-by-case, individualized basis. And it's ultimately up to the line managers and then the department heads and then the division heads and then the, you know, C-suites to recognize that it's about tapping into the values of these individuals and engaging them at a very personal level.
Right. You know, and on the line of spirituality, I just want to share with the listeners how this interview came about. I had known Michelle, you know, for about 7-8 years and hadn't seen her in about 7 or 8 years or spoke to her. And I went to hear Michael Beckwith and sat down, sat down in an empty seat. Michelle had gone to the bathroom and came back and said, "I know you, you're Michael." And all of a sudden we started talking about the spirituality, Michael Beckwith, what he was doing. And there are no accidents in the universe. And I feel, you know, listening to your message, this is a very, very, very important message because, you know, corporate America is really running the country in so many ways. And it's really important to switch the values in there instead of just money and putting out products that really do not have the public's well-being in interest. So to go in there and be a bridge to start to create this caring and nurturing attitude and really start to plant seeds that will help people to transform and help people think about what they're doing more and more and more. So it's a well-rounded situation because I guess in the last few years we've lost over 4 million jobs being outsourced.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's very near and dear in building up the economy and, you know, building up the self-esteem in the country is keeping those jobs back in there. So just elaborate, Michelle, if you've spoken to anybody on these issues and what a transformational leader would do to, number one, keep the jobs in the country, and number two, bring back jobs to the country.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, individual conversations that I may have with the head of a business in terms of what they're doing in creating a vision that differentiates themselves and, you know, within whatever industry or segment they're in to rise above the sort of over-proliferation and, you know, what's their competitive advantage, what's their unique, you know, selling proposition. And it's you know, a sort of an interesting dialogue, you know, that I certainly have had the benefit of having. And they are redesigning their way of going to market. And you're right. I mean, there's always historically been, you know, strategic planning and, you know, real business plans that are put together that says, you know, what's our target audience and what's our route to market and how are we going to, you know, position ourselves, what's our strengths and weaknesses and our opportunities and our threats. So all of that, you know, is what we learn in business school, but ultimately the additional component around how do we effectively lead the people to fulfill that vision? How do we get the followers to be aligned with the vision so that all of those, you know, goals and objectives can be carried forth is now a secondary priority that these business owners are putting in place. So I'll give another example. You know, the role of human resources has what I'm experiencing becoming even more important. Historically, human resources has sort of been this, you know, expense division. You know, they don't generate a revenue. They don't sort of contribute to the bottom line. And it's been somewhat of a challenge for EVPs or, you know, VPs of HR to really be seen as strategic partners, sort of at the management table. And by and large, you know, I'm certainly experiencing it, and I certainly read a lot of trade, you know, periodicals that support the fact that a lot of very smart, evolved CEOs and COOs are now tapping into, you know, the head of HR to ask, you know, what strategic objectives can we put in place to ensure that the way we manage and, well, certainly hire, how do we attract and retain and develop our people, how can that help for us to drive our business results? So, you know, out of HR comes diversity and inclusion. So these sort of, you know, ancillary departments that historically, you know, were there to handle benefits and payroll and compensation are now being asked to be strategic partners on the management team. So that's certainly an indication that we're moving in the right direction in terms of, you know, engaging the people.
Right. And do you find that more departments are cooperating with other departments now?
Yes. I mean, you know, in my experience, I certainly have seen less and less of the silo effect. Because I know, you know, in the 25 years that I was in corporate myself, that was one of the banes of existence that we had, that within an organization, you would have these sort of competitive matches, whether it was finance against marketing or marketing against sales or sales against R&D. I mean, you name it. There were these sort of silos put up and there was this, you know, inbred competition. But yeah, I mean, it may still exist, and some of it really depends on who's leading those functional areas. You know, if they're not evolved and they're not practicing transformative leadership, then, you know, they may be somewhat dysfunctional in the way that they lead their department, and they may not be looking to create synergies and alignment, you know, and work as a team. But, you know, I in my experience, especially now as a coach and a consultant, I'm seeing that less and less. Because, again, it's, you know, if you're going to survive post, you know, this recession and truly be, if you're an organization that's got a global reach, if we're going to compete, then it's about having to do things differently. And the same tried and true methods prior to 2007, 2008, you know, are just not applicable, you know, at this day and age.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. Mm-hmm. This is Michael Collins of Journey to Success Radio, and I'm talking to Michelle Brown, who is the president of Into Action Coaching. So, Michelle, why don't you give the listeners your website again? And I know we spoke and you said that you have a project coming up with your nonprofit.
Yes.
So why don't you give the listeners some information on both of those things, your website, how they can contact you, and what's going on with your nonprofit?
Yes, thank you, Michael. I'd love to. So my company name is spelled somewhat uniquely. My website is www.intuactioncoaching. That's I-N-T-U-A-C-T-I-O-N, coaching, all one word, .com. Let me just sidestep and explain even what that is. Into action is a combination of my intuitive skills as a coach combined with my client's bias for action. So, you know, I look to integrate my own spirituality in terms of listening deeply to my client's needs at a very deep level and trusting my intuition in terms of listening for, in some instances, what is not said. So that's sort of just, you know, a sidebar in explaining the origin of my company name. And yes, thank you for allowing me to speak about a nonprofit that I founded back in 2008, which too is very near and dear to my heart. It's called Woman Power Corp. And, you know, I have a lot of passion, not only around leadership, but around women's empowerment. A lot of it stems from my own story, you know, growing up as a child of the 60s and as a female and not necessarily feeling empowered and certainly not seeing, you know, all of the gifts and talents. I'm not, you know, recognizing all the gifts and talents that I was born with. So in 2008, together with my fellow board members, we founded Women Power Corporation, and we are a educational and resource foundation aimed at supporting women to be powerful, to live what we call designer lives. Designer not in terms of fashion by no stretch, but designer in terms of living their life powerfully on purpose, living at the cause of their life rather than the effect. So, yeah, a lot of the work that we do is hosting events and providing workshops, you know, learning opportunities for women to, you know, step into their unique power. And we have an event coming up June 10th, Sunday, June 10th, in Tenafly, New Jersey at the Clinton Inn Hotel from 1 to 5 called Women Powers Life Class. And we are borrowing from Oprah's Life Class that has really gained a lot of steam and momentum as sort of a learning classroom. And we're going to be doing it, you know, on a local level. But ultimately, the forum is going to be where four coaches and consultants come together representing sort of four areas of life that we feel are very relevant and important to women. The first is career and business. The second area that we'll have a coach consultant speak on is health and nutrition. The third is relationships. And the fourth is around career. No, I said career. The fourth is financial management, money management. So, yeah, it will, you know, be a talk, but most importantly, the participants, those that come out for the luncheon, will have an opportunity to not only hear from these key subject matter experts, but if they're lucky enough to have their question picked from a basket, they'll be coached individually around whatever questions or concerns that they have. But, you know, more important than that, you know, that's the primary format of the afternoon, but it's an opportunity for women to get together, women of like mind, to sort of support and to network. And, you know, it takes a community. So we're
and
really
only,
excited and looking
only
forward
for
to
women.
That. Yes, yes. Well, yeah, we are a women-based organization.
Okay.
Focusing in on women's empowerment initiatives.
Okay. So that's great. And is there a website, or how would people register for this event?
Yes, we actually have created a online registration. It's the http://womanpowercorplifeclass.com womanpowercorplifeclass.eventbrite. And Eventbrite is spelled eventbrite.com. So it's womanpowercorplifeclass.eventbrite.com. Eventbrite.com.
All right. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
And you know, the next question I want to ask you, you said that growing up in the 60s, you felt like you didn't have your power. What did that look like to you? And what was the turning point in your life where you felt, all right, I've made the choice, and now I'm starting to walk in my power. You're taking that first step in your power. I think.
So my story, right, and I will reference it as my story because I lived it as if it were real, and not, you know, that was when I was living at the effect of my life circumstances as opposed to the cause of it. So growing up, you know, as a child of the 60s, my parents, my loving parents who have since made their transition, were incredibly committed to my sister and I. My sister Andrea is 7 years my senior, and we lived in a housing project because, you know, both of my parents were blue-collar, hardworking individuals, but, you know, we lived in a housing project at the time. But their commitment to afford us a better life dictated that they wanted to send us to private school. So we were bused to, you know, predominantly white school in our town. And this was right during the, you know, civil rights movement. You know, my sister and I integrated the school and subsequently were the only, for a while, you know, black students attending it. So the racial prejudice and biases were, you know, pretty prevalent at that time. So not feeling that you belonged, and in some instances overtly being told that you didn't belong, you know, had a very significant impact on my self-esteem and the way that I saw myself. And, you know, the other side of the coin was because of the type of life that my parents wanted for my sister and I, you know, we were not fully embraced by those in our community. You know, I laugh to this day because I was called, you know, Little Miss Anne, you know, because my mother used to dress me with pigtails and patent leather shoes and, you know, sort of those pinafore dresses even to go out and play double dutch, you know. So
right.
I wasn't necessarily accepted by the kids in the community, nor was I accepted, you know, with the kids in my class. So growing up and kind of, you know, feeling somewhat marginalized, it impacted the way I saw myself. And it wasn't until years later that, you know, I was able to kind of overcome that. And, you know, I don't know that there was one pivotal sort of aha that I had. I think it was just the evolution of time and maturity and wisdom and self-confidence that comes from, you know, learning how to find your own voice and recognizing that, you know, I am smart and I am intelligent and I do have something to say and contribute, you know, and then to get that validated is when, you know, I was ultimately able to sort of find my way. And now, you know, even though I may still have bouts of insecurities because, again, I may be a spiritual being, but I'm still moving through my own human existence, I feel more powerful now than I've ever felt. And that's just because of my inner convictions. And I no longer look to please people or to placate. You know, I stick to the strength of my own convictions, and that's, you know, really has sustained me.
Right, because I can imagine growing up that way because in many ways I felt the same way when I was growing up.
Mm.
It was, I felt damned if you do, damned if you don't. And you really didn't belong with any group.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because I was always in honors classes.
Mm.
So I was very separated from the community in many ways. And yet at the same time, I was very athletic, so I was playing sports, so I was back in the community. But I felt like nobody knew me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, you know, my talents, nobody saw them or saw them very with a lot of limitations on them.
Yes. Yeah.
And I felt for me the breakthrough point came, you know, when I really stopped looking for approval.
Right.
And really stopped, you know, because you go to one group and you want to be approved and liked by them. You go to the other group. And in essence, what I felt like I was doing was selling my soul.
Mm-hmm. So, right. In an effort to want to belong. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it's, you know, I think that's the rites of passage that so many of us, you know, we, your story is my story and vice versa. You know, we've got listeners hopefully listening in today, and there's something in what we're sharing that resonates with them. You know, because it's, you know, we live in a society, we're all evolving. So we, you know, don't know what we don't know, you know, and when we know better, we do better. So we have grown up. In a lot of communities and in a lot of environments where people didn't know any better. And, you know, the lack of acceptance was simply because, you know, it's sort of the ego battling for dominion.
Right.
And when you grow past that, and again, you recognize that, you know, we don't want to play victim. So, you know, we lost our power simply because we didn't know at the time that the power was always within us to claim. It was never anything that anyone could ever give us when we recognize that we don't have to win a popularity contest. All we have to do is just, you know, respect ourselves and respect others. Then, yeah, you grow into yourself and become confident. And, yeah, then all of a sudden life begins to take on a whole different meaning.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to say, we are live on the radio right now, and if you want to call in to ask questions of Michelle, please call in at 718-766-4453. Michelle, my next question is, based on that experience and growing up that way, what insights has that given you into people? And what insights has this given you in you becoming a transformational leader?
Mm. So what has my experience given me in terms of insights towards other people?
And also, really, what, you know, to keep it to the subject,
mm-hmm.
What has your experience given you to you becoming a transformational leader?
Gotcha. Yeah, well, I'll look to answer that somewhat combinedly. Those experiences have given me insights and how I've applied it to becoming a transformational leader is recognizing, Michael, that, you know, we're really all just doing the best we can with what we know at the time. And I love that statement by Maya Angelou, you know, that says when people know better, they do better. So, you know, these experiences, and I certainly have had to go through a lot of introspection and a lot of sort of, you know, reflection over my past to eradicate the sort of the victim mindset and seeing the things that others did towards me as, you know, they were the villains and I was the victims, because I was the victim, there's no power in that. So, you know, it's looking back over my past and forgiving. Doing
right.
A lot of forgiving, right? And just recognizing that they just didn't know any better at the time. And, you know, how it's propelled me and compelled me to be a transformational leader is, you know, I've always had the desire to live an authentic life. You know, I've always had an embedded desire and feeling to want to help people. And, you know, even as I was, you know, bouncing off the guide rails myself and trying to find my way, you know. There may be people listening in here, I don't know, that, you know, may have worked with me or for me many years ago before I truly became an empathetic, compassionate, you know, inspirational leader that would say, well, that's not the Michelle I remember. But there was always a soft side that I had with people. And I think it stemmed from, you know, being an African-American girl going through the, you know, the civil rights, I knew what it felt like to you know, have prejudice and bias. So, you know, there's always that sort of deep part of my heart that had compassion for those who were different, and I always wanted to support them and not, you know, show prejudice myself in whatever way that I might lead or motivate. So, you know, I know it's led me to become a coach, because one of the reasons why I became, you know, more of an executive coach and less of a life coach, although there's absolutely aspects of life coaching that I do, even though it's around, you know, an individual's career or their professional life, it's to help them sort of find their voice and to recognize, you know, their inner strengths and their inner qualities in a way that they can, you know, have the confidence and the conviction to lead. So I think my own experience has led me to do what I enjoy doing and has provided me sort of the backdrop to be able to help people to find that for themselves.
Okay, that was very well said. You know, part of me is just thinking of a movie I think I saw. I saw the movie. It's called The Art of Healing.
The Art of Healing?
Yeah, and it was about Tibet when it was invaded by China. And this lady, the Chinese came in, and this lady held the procession, and the Chinese guards really beat her pretty badly, paralyzed her, and she came to the Tibetan monks, and they did a healing. And one of the lines that I always remember and stood with me is that she took this whipping for all of the Tibetan people.
Wow.
And I know that I've listened to James Meredith speak, I've seen Charlotte Gault Hunter speak, and I know James Meredith was the first black American to go to the University of Mississippi. Charlotte Gault was the first African American woman to go to the University of Georgia. And just the reign of terror that they had to withstand.
Uh-huh.
So in many ways, you know, being that pioneer, being you and your sisters, being the first black Americans to go to the school, I would think that on one level you saw a lot of the ugliness of people, and yet at the same time you saw a lot of the beauty of people also, because, you know, people stood by your side, obviously.
Yes.
And I would just imagine that this has just brought you to a different level of compassion.
Yes.
Because, you know, when you go through that, and then grasp the spiritual tools to be able to understand what you were going through and still have compassion for the people who were, quote-unquote, mindless or who were not mindful of their actions,
mm-hmm.
it takes, you know, great compassion. And then to transform that into the corporate world, I think the work that you're doing is very beautiful and very, very needed at this time.
Mm, thank you. Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, I attribute a lot of the perspective that I was able to form, I attribute that to my parents and their ability to help my sister and I understand that, you know, it was important. I mean, I remember the first time I was called nigger. I was
right.
in the third grade, and, you know, I was online. You know, this is when you're in the third grade and everyone has to kind of go to the restroom together and you're holding hands. And I went to reach out to hold the hands of my classmate, and, you know, they made a statement, you know, I don't want to hold hands with this nigger girl. And it was like, whoa, you know, it was just like someone had slapped me upside the face. And I took it in, not really understanding, and came home that evening and told my mom. And I just remember my mom saying, you know, it's okay, they just don't know any better. And I raised this just to make a point that, you know, it's the people that we have in our lives, and whether they're parents or friends or siblings or extended family members, prejudice can only prevail when we aren't broad enough to say, you know, it's something that's happened, but let's not continue to perpetuate the hate. Because very easily, you know, my parents, you know, were before the civil rights, you know, so they very easily, and maybe even with a bit of justification, could, you know, have hated back and taught my sister and I how to hate. But their compassion and their empathy was part of our family values. So, you know, very deliberately, you know, I just remembered my mom comforting me, but in a way that said, you know, it's okay. Don't let anybody say anything to hurt your feelings, because that's purely their opinion. That's not who you are. You know who you are. We know who you are. So I say all of that to say that, you know, even in the workplace, you know, we don't have the racial, I'm not saying it has been eliminated, but it's not as prevalent. Now, you know, it's about gay rights, right? So there's always, you know, another category of people that are being biased against or prejudiced against. But, you know, it's not perpetuating and fostering those differences. This is why I so embrace, you know, the diversity and inclusion initiatives that is very prevalent within a lot of organizations today. And that diversity is beyond just gender and ethnicity or maybe sexual preferences. It goes, you know, into socioeconomic levels and behavioral styles. So it's really about educating, number one, and, you know, showing compassion, you know, for the differences. You know, we are more alike than we are different. So it's really about, you know, being around people who are not going to support a biased or a prejudiced perspective or point of view. It's about, you know, trying to be a bit more expansive and accepting.
Right. And that's what I like to say about people. Be accepting of who people are and allow them to be who they are.
Exactly.
Because when you do that, you know, you eliminate all that prejudice that's within you.
Mm-hmm.
And you give up your opinions and you give up your stereotypes, which really keep you a prisoner and don't allow you to see another person for who they truly are.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it doesn't make you any more right than the other person to, you know, have a similar bias when you feel that, you know, you're being prejudiced against. So you're right. It's kind of having that open heart, which is, you know, again, what I believe the true essence of spirituality is, having an open heart.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
We are down to about the last 8 minutes, so if anybody wants to call in, if they have any comments, any questions for Michelle, please call in at 718-766-4453. And again, Michelle, if you would give your website and give the information on your women's event that is coming up, so this way the listeners can have that information, because, again, from just listening to Michelle, you know that this is going to be a very powerful event. And, you know, for the women to get out there and to expand your mind, this is going to be an opportunity to learn more, grasp more, and open yourself up to new concepts and ideas and really start, get ideas to walk into your power. So, Michelle, if you could give that information out again.
Sure. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate the opportunity. So the website for my coaching company is intoactioncoaching.com. And the information regarding the Woman Power Corp event coming up on Sunday, June 10th, at the Clinton Inn in Tenafly, New Jersey, is http://womenpowercorplifeclass.eventbrite.com. Ticket price is $65 in advance and $75 at the door. And we are, you know, truly expecting an incredible turnout. And, you know, we do know that given the essence of our mission, it is to foster self-esteem and self-confidence and to bring like-minded women together in fellowship to kind of all learn from each other.
And let me ask you this, Michelle. What's the age of women? What would be the youngest woman to come to an event like this?
We invite teen girls. You know, So it goes from teens, you know, and trust me, you know, even if a grandmother chooses to bring her 10-year-old granddaughter with her, you know, we would embrace that all the way up to, you know, our seniors, you know, 80, 85. It's all encompassing. And here's why. We want to foster, you know, the wisdom that comes with age. So, you know, I truly believe I've learned a lot from, you know, my female elders in terms of, you know, their fortitude, right? We stand on the shoulders. And the reason why we like to even embrace the young women is, you know, we certainly read a lot in the paper about sort of the whole mean girl, you know, this the aspect of bullying, which is across, you know, both genders, is a pain that so many kids going through school are experiencing, the separateness and the meanness that comes from, you know, acts of bias and prejudice and dislike. So bringing young girls into the fold at a very young age hopefully will cause them to, if they are being bullied or perhaps they are a bullier, it's to recognize that truly it's a cry for help. You know, the bully out there, you know, maybe they are growing up in a environment where there's, you know, emotional abuse. There may even be physical abuse, and they only know violence to survive. So if they're a victim of that, then they, you know, look to be the villain on the playground. So, or if they're the, you know, recipient of bullying or mean, you know, things that are being said, it's about how to find your voice and speak up for yourself and not, you know, be impacted or affected by, you know, the whispers or the overt, you know, name calling that, you know, so many young people will say towards each other. So it's bringing them into the fold and, again, supporting them and having them listen to our stories and us listening to theirs, in an effort to shortcut some of the painful years, you know, that they don't necessarily have to go through.
And so, in essence, what you're saying is by understanding it and seeing the pain that the elderly women or the older women have gone through, it's a chance and opportunity for everybody to come into a more joyous state, a more happy state, and a more peaceful state.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll get even more specific. You know, having been, you know, a teenager and an adolescent myself, we realize, and, you know, I've got a son now who's 15 years old, and you know, watching him go through adolescence, it brought me back to my days of when you're going through those phases of life, you don't have the wisdom that comes with experience, so you truly don't know who you are, right? We go through the peer pressure. So when people call you names or, you know, make statements about who you are, when you're not clear about who you are, you will believe what they say. And that's why those cuts, you know, those wounds cut very deeply. So it's helping, you know, young women in this particular instance recognize who they are, because when you know who you are, you know your value and your worth, then you become a bit of Teflon, you know, and you get thicker skin, and you allow those things to kind of roll off because you recognize that they're not seeing something in you. They're distorted, you know, in their thinking. So it's a process that we all have gone through, but, you know, a lot of the aim that we do, even though our woman Power Corp organization is not necessarily targeted to young girls. You know, we're looking to support, you know, women, you know, from college age, again, all the way up into their 80s. When we do these events, we absolutely welcome young ladies to attend our events so that they can hear that it's not them.
Right.
And again, in that, find their own sort of value and self-esteem. So that they can kind of get through these formative years with as little pain as possible.
Well, thank you, Michelle. We're in our last minute, and number one, I just want to say thank you. I think the information that you've shared today is very valuable, And I just want to say this is Journey to Success Radio. This is Michael Collins. And again, you can reach me at my website, www.michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Robin, R-O-B-I-N, Collins, C-O-L-L.com. Again, Michelle, thank you for this, and thanks for everybody who's listening, and thanks to everybody who will be listening, because this is some pertinent information. And is there any last thing you'd like to say, Michelle?
No, just to, reciprocate and offer my gratitude, Michael, and the invitation to come on to your show and talk to your listeners and to you this evening. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, because it truly is a subject that I'm incredibly passionate about, and I appreciate the work that you do and the forum that you've provided to me as well as the listeners. So thank you very, very much.
No, you're quite welcome. And I think that we have come to the end of our show. Hello?
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
All right. Good night.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.